Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
That now, this time last year, Khalid El Astal, a Palestinian Irish man who was born in Belfast, lost his wife, his mother and his brother in a devastating military offensive in Gaza. However, his two children survived that onslaught, and their father says it's a miracle they're alive today. After his family members were killed, Khalid returned to Ireland and was reunited with his young children when they managed to flee Gaza. Before we came on air, I spoke with Khalid here in studio, and I began by asking him what this past year was like for him.
You know, I can't imagine it's a year now. And the first I was in Saudi Arabia when everything happened, I didn't see my family for a year. At that time, I was preparing myself to go back to Gaza for my son's Ali birthday. It was the 22nd of November. And then everything started. And, you know, just getting photos, the WhatsApp photos from my friend who was in the hospital with his dad, saying that your mom's killed and your kids are injured and your wife was injured. So, you know, it was terrible, actually. And, you know, it's a year now. It's a year. My wife, she was moving from one place to another, and they bombed the place when they were in the middle of Gaza, just very close to them. And she took the kids from under the rubble, and she moved to another place. And they moved to Khan Yunis, which is where my family is. And my dad arranged an apartment for her family, and they said, no, just go to my family because there will be internet. And we were like happy that any soon we will be, you know, they will be leaving to Ireland. And then the next day in the morning, I get this news. So I don't know, it's really...
And the news was that did it all happen at the same time that your wife was killed and your brother and your mother?
So what happened is my mom, she died there immediately, and my brother. My wife, she was terribly injured. 70% of her body was burned. She lived from the third floor. The kids were for like an hour. They thought they were dead. And they were in the kitchen with my mom, so they fall from all of them from the third floor. My mom died, and the kids were injured. My wife survived for 8 days. And then in the 1st of November, she passed away. Yeah.
I'm really sorry. Yeah. It's extremely difficult. Did you get back in time to see your wife before she passed away?
No, I didn't see her for like now it's 2 years. So a year in Saudi Arabia, and now a year after she's dead. And still, I don't know. Sometimes I think she will come or something like that. I'm not accepting. I don't know. That's the most difficult part. I didn't see her. I didn't see my mom. I didn't see my brother. And it's not only them. Like, my uncle was killed in the same bombing, and his wife and two daughters just 1 week after that. 38 of my cousins, like my first cousins, were killed in just one bombardment. And they're very close cousins. Like, some of them, like, I meet them every day. Yeah. So a lot of things. But, you know, when it comes to my wife, especially my wife, and I don't know, it's not easy.
It really touched me when you said that you look at a picture of your wife every day and the pain of her death hasn't gone away 1%.
Yeah. Exactly. And I don't think it's only 1%. Like, I think it's getting, I don't know, like, I can't explain what I feel. I don't know. I don't understand myself. But still, I keep saying that I love her more than anything, even if she's dead now. But, like, I still love her even more than my kids. And it's very painful to know that the kids will grow up not remembering my wife the same as I want them to do. So, okay, they will know, but, like, they won't remember how she's... I keep comparing myself to her, saying, oh, I can't do just 1% of what she was doing, how good she was with the kids, how good she was with everything. I don't know, but, like, yeah, I love her so much, and she's amazing.
Do your kids ask about her, where she is?
for the first like 4 months, maybe Ali didn't ask. So Sara's only two, and when everything happened, she was only one. But Ali was four, so he can remember. He didn't talk about that for the first four months, maybe. And even when I mention her name, he's like afraid to say anything. And I think I spoke with some psychiatrists, and they said that's normal. He's trying to avoid, you know, to protect himself. That's how his brain works. But after that, he started, you know, when he's crying, like one time he hurt his leg and he start crying. I say, "Mom, I need my mom." When there is something like that happening, he just remember his mom. He gave, like, one time he asked me when I was in the hospital and I was dying with my mom, "You weren't there." He keep trying to avoid speaking about these things, and I don't want to force him. I think they're doing good.
It's not an easy job you have now. You're a lone parent.
Yeah.
And you've come back to Ireland. Your children left Gaza when the war happened, after those injuries, those horrific injuries.
Yeah.
But on the flight, when you were returning from Gaza to Ireland to be reunited with them, you were mourning openly the loss of your wife and your mother and your brother and your wider family. And you met a kind Irish stranger. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so what happened is I wasn't with them from coming from Gaza. So I was in Saudi Arabia. And when everything happened, I just left Saudi Arabia. I went to be with my cousins, you know, in this situation. You want to be with someone. So I left to Turkey. And I stayed there for like a week. I had the flight 2 p.m. and I was, you know, you can't imagine, like, it was only 2 days after losing my wife, and I was crying there, and there was an Irish man, his name is Dahi, and he's one of my best friends now, and he came and he hugged me and said everything will be okay. And then in the airport, he gave me his number and I gave him mine. And then everything started, like, their family for me now.
They're your family now.
Of course, yeah.
Dahi is an Irish teacher, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, he's an Irish language teacher, yeah.
And the reason I mention that is that, and fate is amazing, you found a new home in Dublin now, and I think you sing your children to sleep with Irish songs, is that right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So, so because I met Dahi and so many other people, they're mainly from Kildare. They're all like Irish speakers. When Muhammad, my brother-in-law, came with the kids, they started like teaching Muhammad Irish language, and he took a course as well. And now he's taking like a more advanced course, and he's doing very good.
He is. I saw him.
Yeah, yeah. He's very good. And he's taking a course like yesterday. He had a class yesterday in Dublin. And Dahi, whenever he gets a chance to teach Muhammad or speak with him, he do it. And you know, it's very good. I hope if I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I know now I don't have the energy to learn the language.
Which is understandable.
but that's one of my priorities, like especially for the kids. You know, we're in a place that, you know, I'm an Irish citizen, so that's the least I can do, like teaching the language and, you know, tell them how grateful we are for this country. How
do you feel that now in the past year?
I feel it more than anything else. I think that's the only thing that saved me. You can't imagine how I was when I arrived here, the 3rd of November. I was broken. I was totally lost. I don't know, like, really. So these people I met, like, I mean everyone, like, not only this group of people who are like family for me, but everyone I meet in the street and or everywhere, I think they changed my life. There's a group of like at least 20 people. They call me every day until now, and they say, "How are you?" And like some of them, they come to visit almost every day, every 2 days, to see the kids, play with the kids. And the kids feel that. It's not only me. You know, my kids, they love them so much. That without them, I wouldn't know what to do with my life. But I think that's one of the most important thing for me right now. I don't want to disappoint them. I would want to keep going for them, for the kids and for them. That's really, I can't describe how I feel. to Ireland, to Irish people. You can't imagine how I feel.
You're extremely grateful for everything, the house you're living in at the moment, but it's not ideal, you say.
Yeah, so as I say, I'm very grateful for the government, for the people, for the media even, so for everyone, because I've been very welcomed here. But, you know, now we're four, so I'm with my brother-in-law, Mohammed, two adults and two kids, a boy and a girl, and we're living in one-bedroom apartment. It's really, I would love to work. It's the first time in my life for this year, being at home, not working. That's not my life, that's not me, but like I don't have any choice now, I have the kids. So one-bedroom apartment is really a disaster. You know, I don't have a place to put the clothes. The kids are playing in the kitchen mainly all the time, and it's
you, Mohammed, and the two kids.
Yeah, me, Mohammed, and yeah. So it's like really, I don't have a place to put the clothes.
Yeah. So if that's possible, you're saying something better. The other question finally is, and it's extremely difficult. When do you think, or do you hope that you'll get back to pray at your wife's grave or your mother's grave, yeah, or your brother's grave? When do you think that will happen?
I hope now, but I don't know what will happen. You know what's happening now, I don't have hope. You know, hope is the most dangerous thing. I had hope when my wife was alive and the doctor said that she won't die, and she just passed away. I had hope that my brothers, two Irish citizen brothers, and they should be here, and my dad, and now it's a year and they're not here, so I'm not sure, but I would like the only thing I think when I want to go back to Gaza is just to go to my wife's grave and my mom. I hope it will be soon, but what's happening is so bad.
Well, I hope it does happen soon. And I know it's been a really difficult year for you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming into us and telling us your story. Salaam alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Thank you very much.
Khalid al-Assal. Thank you.
Thank you very much.